Yow. I hope you had your volume turned down. Sorry about that. I'm Scott Linden, your host here at the Upland Nation Podcast. Going on a little adventure. Well, literally and figuratively. I'm headed out for a chucker hunt tomorrow morning. 4 days in Southeast Oregon. Hope my legs hold up. Hope Flick's pads hold up. And I hope you're looking forward to one as well. But so much positive feedback on some work I've been doing on valley quail that I thought maybe now is the time to kind of acquaint you more with, well, one of the West's unsung game birds. So we're going to cover that topic at length here on the Upland Nation Podcast. From the Cabela's Podcast studio, we'll take an intimate look at the legend and lore of the California quail, including where to find them and how to hunt them. In our Handle It segment, the tailgate exam part two. And in our This Land Is Your Land public access segment, I'll give you some starting points for a quail hunt. It's all coming up on the Upland Nation Podcast. Our reader poll is now a regular part of this thing, and I hope you're looking forward to it. The biggest threats to hunting, according to the folks who responded. And first off, we're going to talk about your last weekend. In the studio with me, of course, you can probably hear him licking his pads right now. That's Flick, my German wire-haired pointer. He's a good boy, figuring it all out, just 3 years old and doing an excellent job. Last weekend, we were out in, points east of me, which means almost to Idaho, and he was stellar on valley quail, which is what kind of got me to thinking about doing a whole podcast on the topic. Learned so much yet again. This season, if you're in the West, you're probably figuring it out too. If not, let me save you some trouble. Don't hunt anything that doesn't have green feed and is near moisture. Near being, 300-500 yards. Every bird that I've seen, including the few that I've shot, has been close to water of one sort or another. It could be a seep or a spring. It could be a creek or a river. It could be a pond or a stock tank. Whatever it is, it's got to be wet. Okay, so let's start out with the Monday morning debrief. Brought to you in part by Sage and Breaker Gun Care Products. Crafted at the highest caliber. On that last hunt, I had to wade a river and then wade through 4 inches of moon dust. Sage and Breaker's CLP, it's kind of a little spray bottle, clean, lube, protect, came in real handy at the end of the day. It's got some anti-magnetic properties, so all the dust does not stick as easily to your metal parts of your gun. Sure enough, the next morning, it was relatively dust-free even in that environment. Free shipping always at sageandbreaker.com. I'll see you there. Yeah, some of my my blogs are there, and I hope you enjoy them. You can't find those anywhere else. Those are exclusive to Sage and Breaker. And also brought to you by Dogtra TNB Dual Collar System and thedogenergybar.com. If you're looking for a pick-me-up for your dog, no, it's not Red Bull or a cup of coffee. It's thedogenergybar.com. Now is the time when you need to start working on that. Yeah, so how was your weekend? Many of you are more than willing to share your successes, your frustrations, and everything else on the Facebook page. Go to Wing Shooting USA's Facebook page. On Monday mornings, I ask you how you did. Joel Witt did pretty good, he said. Lots of fun. No birds in the bag. I get it, Joel. It's all about the dogs, isn't it? Jeff Patrizzi is getting ready for his first ever true duck hunt. Are those like diving ducks or dabbling ducks? Are true ducks? No, I get it. Good luck, Jeff, on November 15th. Can't wait for a report from you. We've all been there. Joe Sutter. Joe got the first solid point out of his dog, and boy, is there anything better. I bet your head and your heart both swelled when you saw that. I hope it ended up in a bird in the bag. Mike and Erica Carr said they had a hit and miss weekend, and James Falconer is in South Dakota from Michigan. That's all that matters, he says. Yeah. Well, and by the way, Mike and Erica Carr, that's quite a pile of chuckers you got there. I hope you did something good with them. Working on a recipe right now. I'll share it with you if I get it right. All right. So here we are, you know, talking quail, mountain quail. Well, maybe later if I'm so inclined. I got a little bit to say about them. And a lot about valley quail. Now, you may know them as something else. California quail. And to a great degree, that's where most people related to them maybe had their first or only experience with them. But California quail are native to a whole bunch of the West, particularly the area we call the Great Basin. So if you're familiar with a map, it's the stuff between the Sierras and the Cascades on the left side and the Rockies on the right side. It's a little more specific than that, but it's that whole desert area. I call it the place rivers go to die, because they will drain into that. The Truckee's a good example, and they have nowhere to go. They don't have any route to the sea. The Great Salt Lake is one of those sumps where all this water accumulates, but there are many, many more. Some of them just shadows of their former self as a giant, giant lake that often got called a sea of one sort. Bonneville is one of those. The remnants of Pyramid Lake down in Nevada are another one. All those low spots used to hold a lot more water, and that's why the petroglyphs are so high up on the cliffs in some of those areas. But I digress. Why valley quail? Well, number one, they work well for a dog. Number two, they're just so beautiful, especially the males. I mean, you cannot miss one. If you've ever seen one, you know what I mean. Strikingly colored. First, that little top knot. It's very jaunty, and they dress up, all that sort of thing. They're little birds. A lot of people look down on them, literally and figuratively, because they're small. But they do occupy an outsized place in many hunters' hearts. They're kind of a dichotomy. This morning, I watched them steal water out of my backyard fountain. They come to it every morning, and they do ornament the lawn in a very festive way. But most of the time, especially when we're hunting them, we're in austere wild landscapes. They are denizens of the same kind of country as chuckers and even sage grouse. The joy, though, is they like slightly more level ground. And that's what I love about them. You know, I'm going on a chucker hunt. I told you that tomorrow morning. On the third day of that hunt, I bet we spend a lot of time in the creek bottoms on the leveler ground looking for a valley quail. That's another reason I love them. They're a great adjunct to a chucker hunt or sometimes even a sage grouse hunt, depending on where you are. They'll sit there on those fence posts and they'll make that call, you know, which is unmistakable. It's a longer version of the one the bobwhites use. But you cannot forget it once you hear it. And that's another thing I love about them. Not only will they make that call, they will respond to that call. I get that question about once a month on Facebook. Scott, is there any way to, you know, locate quail? And I said, yeah, try a quail call and do that. And, you know, 20% of the time, those birds will actually come running towards you because it's their, you know, gather call, if you will. They're beautiful. I told you that. White eyebrow, chin straps, black bib and a head, that body with those scaled side breast feathers and that top knot. Looks like they kind of were assembled out of the spare parts from a game bird warehouse, but in the most artful way, not in the Johnny Cash one piece at a time build a Cadillac from 14 different models version. And they're just so fun to hunt. Once you bust up a covey, the singles will cooperate extremely well for a pointing dog. In fact, we watched a covey in the distance fly out of their Russian olive roost last Tuesday morning. We were too far away to go after them, and I just made a mental note of where they went. And sure enough, a couple hours later, we went back into that general vicinity. I looked at it. I figured out the strategy, and for once in my life, I was right. Flick was not right. He was over the other side of the railroad grade when the birds started getting up in onesies and twosies and flying over the cliff. I wasn't going to shoot him anyway because that would have been a really ugly retrieve. But we did mark the few that went the other way, and sure enough, once again, once we got around that big rocky outcropping, Flick started picking them up in ones and twos, and finally his work started settling down. He's a flighty kind of, you know, he's still a youngster. Did a great job, slammed a point on a pair. I shot one of those, and I thought, okay, it's time to end the day. Now, on the way back, he did the same thing again. I got a single out of that. So if you're looking for a bird that really appreciates pointing dog work, and if you have a pointing dog that needs some appreciation, consider the Valley Quail. All right. So where are you going to find them? All right. Well, you're going to find them in the dry Intermountain West. I called it the Great Basin, and it's all of that and more, but that's the huntable populations. They're in that area that's generally owned by the Bureau of Land Management, so it's publicly accessible. There's a lot of it. If you still believe in the old school paper maps, it's all the yellow stuff on those maps in parts of Oregon, California, Washington, Utah, Idaho, even up into a little corner of Montana, but don't tell anybody, and then down into parts of Nevada. I told you Nevada, yeah, which is another wonderful story. Maybe I'll talk about Nevada in another podcast sometime. Speaking of which, this is the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host, and yeah, hopeful too. Always hopeful. That's what dogs will do for you, won't they? All right, so you find him in that kind of deserty sagebrush steppe country. You'll find him in the hills. You'll find him in the forests as well. But most of the publicly accessible land where you'll find valley quail is going to be more desert-like, more arid. It's generally unpopulated. There's a long walk and a lot of mile markers for a valley quail covey. Most of it is, you know, volcanic in nature. There's lava rock of one sort or another, lots of seismic activity. The tallest fault block in America is, well, number one, looming over one of my favorite Lahontan cutthroat lakes, but number two, also harboring dozens and dozens of valley quail coveys throughout that range right in there. Lots of dark skies and thousand-mile looks. You never know what you're going to find, a rock teepee ring or a rotting wagon wheel. Place I was at opening weekend, farther from a hospital and a Starbucks than anywhere else in the lower 48 states. So if you're looking for desolation or isolation or anything along those lines, head for Wild Mustang Country. We were stepping all over there. Well, you know what I mean. That stuff that gets stuck on your boots. Out there in what the Mexican conquistadors, the Spanish conquistadors, called the Northern Mysteries. Now, one of the funner parts about quail hunting, or hunting anything in the Intermountain West, is the people. And boy, oh boy, if you're not taking advantage of the opportunities to talk to and visit with the folks you meet along the way, your life needs a little bit more dimension. I've emptied a bottle with a buckaroo that used to ride his horse to school and back every day. His grandparents were the last people killed in the Bannock Indian War. I've met reformed cattle rustlers, more Native Americans of various tribal affiliations than I can even count. You never know what you're going to find out there. I found the dugout homestead place of David's grandfather, who started as a vaquero on the Pea Ranch down there in southeast Oregon. A lot of folks are out there still living the Western lifestyle. Yep, they're roping and they're riding and they're leading the they're riding for the brand. It's the real deal out there. So if you meet somebody with a flat-topped hat that harkens back to the old California days, I'll bet it's sweat-stained and full of dust, and there's something on his boots. You wander around enough out there in Valley Quail country, you'll find an old gold mine or a willow corral. I remember one old-timer said, yeah, the guy who used to live there, he would trap coyotes. And in the summertime, he'd just bring them in, put them in the willow corral, and then shoot jackrabbits to feed them until it got to wintertime and the pelts were worth selling. Okay. Whether he was yanking my chain or not, I don't know, but I think it's a great story. And in fact, I'm going to put that in a magazine article real soon now that I think about it. There's a hot springs I soak in once in a while. It's gotten a little bit too civilized and way too popular for me lately, but if you walk up the hill about 150 yards, you'll find what's left of a road, and that road leads to an ancient apple orchard. You know, these days, I bet those apples are probably pretty popular, all the heirloom varieties and that sort of thing. And then there's the legend and the lore. You know, quail are a symbol of earnest communication and social relations. You know, they're social birds. You know, they are. They're always in a covey, and if they're not in a covey, they're trying to reassemble their covey all the time. They're constantly talking to each other. I call it muttering. They just sound like they're kind of talking out of the side of their beak, you know, just to make sure everybody knows how they feel about that particular spot or the feed they're after, right? Whatever it is, they're muttering all the time. And then there's that more intriguing, when they know you're around and they're about ready to fly. So put your gun to the port arms position and get ready to roll. You know, there's another old legend that I really like. I might come to it again later. I haven't organized my notes quite as well as I thought I would. Back in the day, and this is some useful knowledge as well as legend. Back in the day, a starving covey of quail found a sleeping coyote. They, with their little beaks, they chipped off a little chunk of coyote meat from this guy and ran away to eat it. Well, the coyote woke up, realized part of him was missing. He blamed it on the quail. He chased them until they flew up into a tree and roosted there for the night while he stayed down below the whole time. And that is, to this day, why Valley quail roost in shrubs and trees. Yeah, you'll never find that characteristic circle of poop that the bobwhites leave behind on the ground because they're up in a tree somewhere. And that's all well and good until you and your dog walk underneath it a little bit too early in the morning and 20 birds take off with a roar that is outsized for their size. Sounds like a jet engine going off. And believe me, I know jet engines. I used to work in an airport. So there you go. There's your quail and coyote trivia for the day. Pointing dogs, my favorite. You can hunt them with flushers. A good friend of mine haunted the river bottoms of California as a kid with a mutt who accidentally pushed birds into the air by accident all the time he was doing this. Now that same friend chases those birds in the desert with me. His flusher, my pointer, doesn't matter. Get out, have a good time. Hunt them without a dog if you have to, but I just don't see the point. All right, so a little bit more legend, and then we'll take a quick break. We got a lot more to talk about, believe me. I've watched coyotes stalk deer. I've been shadowed by bighorns. I've found a golden eagle nest and more petroglyphs and pictographs than I know what to do with. But of all of those things, what I love most is finding the birds who are wandering around making their noises below, aside, within those places. Volcanoes birth this corner of the world, and a lot of them are still active. Yep, Mount Lassen last erupted in 1910, and it's probably getting ready to go again. 1910? Yeah, right around there. Anyway, there's more there than you can shake a stick at in terms of great stories, legends. And, you know, once you're up there, you'll make a few of your own. And in the meanwhile, you ponder all of that. In our next segment, I'll get a little bit more practical on you, do some things about how to hunt them and why. But first, a quick commercial break. You know how I'm obsessed with peak performance, not only my own, but my dog's. That's why I feed Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more about them at drtims.com. Get 30% off your first order. Just use the code UplandNation. Lots of good reasons for that, from the protein content and the protein ratio, to the fact that every single ingredient is sourced. Hey, I thought I turned you off. Anyway, I will now. Every single ingredient is sourced from the finest natural origins, and you can read all about each of them on the website, drtims.com. In addition to a bunch of varieties of food, depending on what you're looking for in your old dog, young dog, or anything in between, there's food supplements from pad protectors to toppers. Flick is particularly enamored with those because when we go hunting, the last thing he wants to do is eat. So I got to tempt him with all sorts of things. And Dr. Tim Hunt has some of the best. It's all at drtims.com. Don't forget, 30% off. Just use the Upland Nation coupon code. And ESPAmerica.com is where you learn more about the best electronic earplugs. I mentioned that big covey swarming out of the Russian olive on a certain river I can't name. I'm sworn to secrecy. I heard them even from 300 yards away, and mainly because while I did have two ESP earplugs, one in each ear, they are so useful, accurate, I don't know what to call it, sensitive and realistic, you can hear that roar even across the river. I won't tell you how I shot, but I did hear the birds. 30-day money-back trial, it's all at ESPAmerica.com. Shop all the varieties and then pick one and try it at your leisure. Custom fit so that nothing gets around it except the sounds that you want to hear. It's all at ESPAmerica.com. Thanks for sticking with me from the podcast studio at Cabela's. My name is Scott Linden. It's the Upland Nation podcast. Promised a few more practical things in this half of the program, starting with our Handle It segment, all about stuff that I've learned the hard way so you don't have to when it comes to the care and feeding and training of your dog. Have you seen the video yet? The tailgate exam, go to the YouTube page or go to my Facebook pages and you should get a quick look at all the things that I do to my dog's wheels at the end of the hunt to ensure that he is ready to roll and firing on all eight cylinders and all four paws the next day. First off, how well do you know your dog's feet? Well, if you don't, here are a few things you might want to consider. First off, pad care. You know, a lot of people will say they need to harden a pad, you know, but if you think about it, if that pad is hard, like it is, like the calluses from playing guitar, if you do that, you know what I mean? They get dried out, and then once they're dried out, they crack. And then when they crack, they peel or they get infected. So instead, think about your dog's pads like leaves. You got a dry leaf in one hand and you got a green leaf in the other hand. Make a fist with both. Open them up. Which leaf is going to survive the next hunt? I know I'm mixing metaphors now, but you know what I mean. Condition your dog's pads with something. Now, I like Happy Jack Pad Coat, P-A-D, new word, K-O-T-E, happyjackinc.com is where you learn more about them. But condition them with something that will allow those pads to stay strong, but supple, so that when they encounter something that's, I don't know, pointy, sticky, abrasive, they can fold around it instead of crack like a brittle leaf or a dry stick. So I asked how well you know your dog's pads. Do you know that in the front paws, you know your dog's paws? In the front, there's a space between each of the toes. You know the one in the middle? It's deeper than the other two. So when you're looking at those, look a little deeper. And an old trapper told me this years ago, in fact, on the very first TV show I ever did, coyote pads are all four the same size. Dog feet, the front feet are bigger than the back feet. All right, there's your trivia for the day here at the Upland Nation podcast. Watch the video on YouTube. Get a full, 360 view of your dog's feet and what you should be doing to them at the end of every hunt in the tailgate exam. Now, on with our Valley Quail Primer. All right, so you're looking for Valley Quail. You're in the right place, or at least you hope you're in the right place. Remember, they're called Valley Quail for a reason. So if there are any folds and wrinkles in the land, whether it's a bump, a knob, a gully, or a hill, you might want to start there. They love the little, the little hiding places, if you will. They leave their shrub or tree roost late in the morning. The colder it is, the later they leave, and look for food. They're not going to go any farther than they have to. So if you're lucky, you're finding a place with good roosts and good food close by. We'll talk about water in a few minutes as well. But that's where I would start. Now, I found them in all sorts of other places. I found them amongst old farm machinery and old buildings. I found them on hilltops and even snowy mountains. But to even the odds when you're up against these cagey little critters, start where there's some bumps, some knobs. All right. Be stealthy. If you can, take the tags off your dog's collar. Speak softly if you have to speak at all, and stow the whistle and step carefully. They are skittish little birds, and their hearing is way better than ours. Don't ask me why, but it is. Sometimes you can hear that song. Sometimes you can see the sentry perched on a rock or a fence post or anything else that's higher than everything else. He'll keep an eye out for everybody who's feeding, and then somebody else will spell him, and he'll get down and feed or water. Avian predators have trained quail to fly low, so be careful when you're shooting. I've watched valley quail chased by Cooper's hawks, and it looked like that first Star Wars movie with the fighters that Luke Skywalker piloted, jinking and dipping and rising, all at shrub level. So be careful about your shots, especially if your dog is not steady. Now, here's one thing that has served me well over and over again. Almost always, a covey will rise and you'll miss. Well, I'll miss. Okay, you might hit something. But if you do, great. If you don't, either save that second shot or reload quickly, because there's always one that will wait you out. You'll get the shot when everybody else is complaining about the bad shooting they just concluded. Another thing is, if you're in a spot where you think that covey landed, yeah, the likelihood is most of them didn't land there, or they did and then their feet were already moving before they hit the ground, and so they're not there. But there might be one or two there. Send the dog in. If you got nothing out of the dog, stand still and be quiet for a couple more minutes. That will scare the bird into thinking you found him and you're just waiting him out, and he'll fly. Now the fun begins. Quail will almost always cooperate better after they're broken up into singles and doubles. So let your dog do the work. Get to the general area. Put him in downwind of that area. Stay out of the way and let him start doing his magic. They'll hold better than they did when they were covey as well. So you will have the time to do like I did on that last hunt. See flick from 30, 40 yards away. Swing around, get the sun behind me. Get to a spot where I could squeeze that bird between me and the dog. Tell the dog that magic word, W-H-O-A, which he's doing right now. And then walk in and fly the bird in the direction that is safe and helps your shooting the best. You know, quail hearts are about the size of your fingernail, but they're as big as the night sky. They're brave little birds, and they'll hunker down, like I said, until they think you've sussed them out. I've also seen the mothers and the fathers decoy predators from the nest. They'll do that same thing that a lot of the shorebirds will do, you know, fake a broken wing and then kind of waddle off flying a little bit. So you got to admire them for all sorts of things that you may not have thought a little tiny brain like that could figure out. I've also seen them attack humans personally. One of my older pointers years ago pointed on the edge of a little stream that holds a few steelhead smolts part of the year. I was on one side, he was on the other. I found half a beaver dam going halfway across. And I thought, well, from that half, I could probably jump the rest if I needed to. Yeah, once I got on it, I realized that thing wasn't able to even hold my weight for very long. But it didn't matter because two quail got up from in front of my dog. One flew right at me. I had to duck, so he lived to tell the story. The other one, and maybe it was a strategy, the other one towered like a ringneck, and I recovered in time to bop that one. My dog did get a retrieve out of it. Good boy, buddy. He did a good job, and I was lucky enough not to fall in on that one. Now, they're not as predictable as some birds. Then again, sometimes they are exactly predictable. They will almost always come to water daily early in the season until the rains start and then until the snow comes. So if you know that favorite cover should hold birds and it's not, look for the nearest water and hunt around it. Now, sometimes that'll be uphill on some tiny rock pool that caught last week's rain. It doesn't matter. Just look for water of one sort or another. They'll eat seeds most of the season. I found two different varieties in those birds last week. One was a cheatgrass, favorite food of the chuckers as well. And the other one was from what I think most people call a Canada thistle. They're those big bulby kind of sticky things, and they rattle because those are the seeds inside rattling. Well, they fall to the ground. I don't know if the quail break them up or somebody else does, but there's lots of those in those crops. But then again, if you got forbs, you know, low-growing, anything green, they'll eat some of that too. I've seen them eat weeds. I've seen them eat little broad-leaved, I don't even know what they're called, and even a Russian olive every once in a while, but they're so big for quail, it's a little bit of work. They have to chip at them for a while. So, fun birds, wonderful critters, wonderful places. I shot a bird once that flew all the way down into a, I guess I'll call it a cattail slough. That just, you know, just surprised the heck out of me that the bird had that much energy to get there, but it worked for us too, because I sent Manny in and 10 minutes later he came out with it. They'll also be in the snow. I've mentioned that. I'll never forget a place in northern Nevada near Winnemucca where we were actually looking for chuckers. And I scaled one small hill, probably a couple 300 feet. And at the top, there's a dog on point. And I'm looking at the dog. The dog's looking at me. The dog is then looking into this little tiny cave in a foot and a half snow. It's the only dry ground in the whole place. And out of that cave came 15 valley quail. Lots of fun chasing those in the snow. It was kind of like a sleigh ride. We were sliding as much as we were walking the rest of the way. If you're looking for water, then you'll probably find nice, thick, bankside willows and alders. The birds will loaf in that stuff. Or whatever else is available that's growing along that riparian zone. But if there's no bare ground underneath that overstory, the likelihood of finding birds there is a lot lower. They need to be able to run around, whether it's to feed or to get away from you, because that's their primary escape strategy. So look for that kind of cover. And if you hear that, stand by for a flush. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. We're talking valley quail. I hope you're enjoying what might or might not be another insight or two for you, but it's fun to talk about these birds, and I hope you get something out of it. another great legend. If you've ever been startled by that covey flush and the roar of those, I mean, the wings are like 6 inches long, but they make a sound that can only be described as a bunch of jets taking off. Eagle gave quail the ability to scare hunters with that sound. That's another Indian legend that I discovered recently around a campfire. They'll fly more erratically than most. Thanks again to the lessons Cooper's hawks have taught them over the generations. They will not fly in a straight line. They will use all available obstacles to put them between you and them. And then they will fly left and right and up and down, and they might hit the ground and then fly again. So be ready, be safe, know where your dog and where everybody else is at all times. Set your feet right so that when you are ready to shoot, you can swing hard left and swing hard right. You know, Nash Buckingham called Bob White's the gentleman of the quail family. You might have another name for valley quail after you hunt them once or twice, but they're always fun. They're a good time to watch and to eat. Just be careful about how long you cook a little tiny valley quail. Keep the skin on if you can. Bring plenty of ammo. And if you come home empty-handed, at least when it comes to game in your bag, you'll still have plenty of memories and a great, great story or two. Nothing like them, valley quail. Yeah, I got way more to talk about. We're just about through, but I've got This Land Is Your Land, our public access feature, and a few other things, including the reader poll from last week's e-newsletter. So don't go away. All right. Scott Linden here, Upland Nation Podcast. Every week I send out what I call the Weekend Essentials. It's an electronic newsletter. If you haven't gotten it yet, sign up at findbirdhuntingspots.com. It's free, supported by our podcast sponsors, and hopefully there's something in there every week that will be of value to you, whether it's a hunting technique, a place to go, or a little bit of everything. I also ask a question every week in a reader poll, and this last one was, what is the biggest threat to hunting? Well, I guess we're on the right track talking about things in our This Land Is Your Land segment, because lack of access to hunting ground is the number one priority. 33% of you think that's the biggest threat to hunting. 32% think we're not getting youth started early enough or enough youth started, period. Number four on the list would be government mismanagement, regulation, red tape, whatever you want to call it, but blame it on the man. And then number four, the anti-hunting movement. Surprisingly, very few of you, 4.5%, say the cost of ammo, the cost of shotguns, that sort of thing. Or another 2% say, yeah, I don't have any free time anymore. I got other things to do, whatever it is. So that's good news. And hopefully we're all working toward creating more and more public access land out there. All right. So the rest of the show brought to you by Gunner Kennels. Gunner.com is where you land. Oh, all sorts of great stuff from dog kennels, the safest dog kennels around, double-walled construction, to their new food crate. These are not for everyone. They're pretty spendy. But tell you, if you value your dog and you value your dog's food, you might want to combine all those things and protect your pet food from moisture, UV light, rancidity, mold, rodents, bugs, all of the stuff will cause the food to go bad sooner and increase the risk of bacterial contamination. Learn more about all the accessories at gunner.com. And then learn all about the dog energy bar and what it might do for your second, third, fourth, and fifth day of a long hunting trip at dogenergybar.com. I think I've probably told you this once or twice, but I love that product, and then I freaked out when it was gone off the shelves at my favorite pet store. I dug and dug and dug and finally contacted the makers in Denmark and convinced them to sort of bring it back to the United States, and I became the U.S. sporting dog distributor for the product. I believe in it. My dogs believe in it. And maybe you will too. Learn all about it, the nutritional makeup, and why I believe and others believe, including the Danish Army sled dog patrols in Greenland. They all use it for good reason. Dogenergybar.com. Special deal right now, 2-pack, come in handy. I think you'll enjoy it. I think your dog will love it. Tastes great to a dog. Can't say the same for you, but it's all about your dog. All right, the Upland Nation podcast this week, we're talking about valley quail. And last but not least, where do you start? If you're looking for hunting spots, this land is your land, and valley quail are a perfect example. As I mentioned, the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service are the primary landowners, and we own them. Consider some of these starting points. Any tributary of the Columbia River east of the Cascade Mountains. The Snake River, the Owyhee, the John Day, the Deschutes, Washington's Yakima River. All of Palouse country up there in eastern Washington. Anywhere in the Great Basin. So that dry, sumpy place between the Rockies and the Sierras and the Cascades, northern Nevada, the California-Oregon border are all worth prospecting. Find a town. Could be Winnemucca, Nevada. Could be Boise, Idaho. Could be Spokane, Washington. Find some yellow on the map and then start digging deep. Good luck, and I'll see you out there. I can almost guarantee it. I'll be there again soon. All right, one last request. Please visit espamerica.com and learn more about all the electronic earplugs, and the choices there at espamerica.com. And with that, I will thank you for your kind attention to our special podcast on valley quail. I know I waxed poetic maybe a few more times than I should, but can't help it. This is my ode to the valley quail. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll tell your friends. I hope you'll subscribe. I hope you'll rate or review the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. They're all places where you can help simply by leaving a good review or a rating. Speaking of that sort of thing, thank you Ozark Setter, Jimmy CRF 450, and Halber GP for your kind reviews. Quote of the day comes from that old TV baseball commentator who was starting out his career as a catcher until he figured out he was a better talker than he was pitch caller, Joe Garagiola. He says, "I guess you don't really own a dog. You rent them. And you should be thankful that you had a long lease." Amen to that, Joe. Thank you for all of the fun you've brought to us over the years. And all of you, thanks for listening. See you in the field.